You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staffer at IndyCornrows.com. And joining me on the other line with 44 days of the NBA season is Mr. Tony East. Happy Labor Day, Tony.
Happy Labor Day, Adam. This is our labor, so we are celebrating the way we know how, right?
Yeah, well, we're finishing off our Labor Day weekend by talking Pacers, talk some division, and we're going to talk some most average Pacers team, least standing out team.
September is here. We finally made it through August. I hope everyone liked the fan shows. Those were a good time.
Yeah, next we're going to do player previews, so hopefully that'll be a little more interesting, but obviously I think the fan shows were interesting in a different way, let's put it that way.
Yeah, it was cool to have a different perspective and to have topics that we could never have thought of ourselves because we didn't literally have your scenarios. But yes, player previews start Friday. It'll be me and Adam doing Tyreek, and then we'll have guests or solo pods for the other players and combos for the whole rest of the month, basically. So that'll all be fun stuff.
And that'll take us right up to preseason basketball and then right up to NBA preseason basketball and then back to our normal sort of weekly or daily shows about games and whatever else is going on with the Pacers, which is
back
a lot
the daily show. Thank God we can watch games and actually have stuff to talk about instead of 538 articles about average Pacers teams.
Yeah, so that's a good transition. So I sent this text to Tony earlier in the week. 538 did a great little piece on just like the most average teams in every sport. I think the idea behind it was basically what teams kind of don't have the most, which means they didn't underachieve, overachieve, or you know, they didn't see it as either like the worst team ever or the best team ever. They kind of were in this middle class of teams. And ironically, I guess, I don't know if I would have maybe thought of this, but the Pacers 2016-17 ranked second among NBA teams in terms of mediocrity. The first was Dallas 2015-16, and then the 88-89 Boston Celtics were number three. So that Pacers team, if everybody needs a refresher, Tony and I mentioned this team a lot because it's the team that was Paul George, Jeff Teague, kind of Miles Turner, was sort of the top three, yet Thad Young, who's still on the team, obvious, I guess the way to put it is spacing clusters of Rodney Stuckey, Monte Ellis, and then eventually Lance Stephenson, who kind of the same way in the playoffs.
Yeah, Aaron Brooks, a bunch of just gross players played.
Kevin Serafin, a lot of guys are no longer in the league.
Yeah, a lot of guys longer in the league. Wow, I would want to run the numbers on that. One, yeah, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight as of now, possibly nine, depending on how long Niang sticks. Already gone.
Is Niang in the league still?
Yeah, the Jazz signed him.
Okay, so like Joe Young isn't, Raheem Christmas isn't. Is Serafin still in the league? He's not, right?
Serafin's gone, LaVoy Allen's gone, Aaron Brooks is gone, Monte Ellis is gone, Rodney Stuckey's gone, and Serafin's gone.
And Lance Stevenson's probably hanging on by a thread still.
And Lance and Niang are just barely dangling. So pretty much only five dudes.
And so only two players from this team remain on the current roster. That was Miles Turner's rookie season and Thad Young, which is
that was sort of second season.
Second season.
Yeah. First year of Thad, though. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's odd. So the reason that we brought this up as Tyler basically is because I wanted to complain about Paul George first, just one more time, you know, because
I wanted to say before you do this, Adam said, can I complain about Paul George for 10 minutes? And I said, you can, I will not. So go ahead, Adam.
So here is a stat I want to bring up, why they were such a mediocre team the entire year. So this team went, 42-40, so right above the 41-41 average. They were the seventh seed in the East. They lost and were swept by the Cavs in the first round. That was the series where they basically lost by a combined 16 points. It was like the lowest margin for a sweep in NBA history. So it's a great little, I guess, small, not really great victory, but a kind of thing you hang your hat on, I guess, when you get swept. But Paul George in that season, I think, basically gave up until the month of March. So if you take his stats from basically the beginning of the season until the end of February, he put up 21.7 points per game. On basically 44, 37, and 91. That was his shooting splits. But then you take the month of March, and the season was 22 games. All of a sudden, that jumped to 28, 7.5 rebounds per game on 50, 42, and 86. So basically, a completely different player in the month of March than he was anywhere else. If you remember right, he was trying to make an All-NBA team to kind of jump into that designated player extension contract, which is for $219 million, which he never obviously signed, never got into. you know, there was issues that he was maybe traded or on the trade deadline midseason and then got pulled off, and he wasn't really told by Larry Bird, and there was issues with that. But ultimately, I thought Paul George really kind of slow walked basically until March, turned it on the last minute in the playoffs, but he easily could have put up those 28-7s, maybe not quite that high, but maybe 26-7 all season long, which would have probably pushed the Pacers out of this mediocre level into like maybe one of the top five seeds in the East, which maybe could give him a shot to actually make the Eastern Conference Finals that year. I think the Raptors were the 1 or 2 seed that year.
Do you still have those splits in front of you?
I do.
Do you have the shot attempts per game before and after?
So he was 10 for 20 in March, and he was 7.5 for 17.1 the other 5 months of the season.
The other 3 shots per game, I think, that he gained in the second half is because of the more spacing, you know, when they switched away from starting Monte Ellis, who bleeds into my why they were so average, I think, is because of Paul George, like you, but for a different reason. I think they were really average because they had a lot of slightly below average players and then a very good player. And it's really hard to have consistency when you have no like a very inconsistent roster of players like that, where so many guys can just be bad every game. You only have one good dude, and you're counting on contributions from a lot of guys who are just, as we just said, not NBA players anymore. That season was crazy weird, too. They had that 7-game win streak in the middle of January, and then they immediately lost 6 games right after it. They had a bunch of 5-game streaks and then had the opposite streak right after. Ben Gibson did a bunch of research on this stuff, which was pretty funny. They were 8-7 in close games, decided by 5 points or fewer. And it was 3 points or fewer, they were 4-2. I mean, like, everything they did was just like, we have a roster that is constructed very oddly, and we don't, you know, it's like very situational where they could get stuff done.
But my thing is, they should have had a lineup where, and we've seen this kind of work with different players, but a Jeff Teague, Paul George, C.J. Miles, Thad Young, Miles Turner lineup should have been more than mediocre. And that's kind of Paul George's fault.
It was. When they switched away from Monte starting, they were good.
But they did that early on. And
we have a record of with and without Monte in the starting lineup. Man, I didn't think about this.
Well, you should have, because that's the big reason why they're mediocre, probably. Because
Monte sucked. And they hated that guy. I mean, we've talked about that a million times, but –
I still think, though, if you watch the actual games, though,
he stopped when he got hurt. They made it to like Christmas, I thought. Yeah,
I think that when you just actually watch the games, it did feel like at times Paul George like wasn't trying as hard as he could.
Right.
You're talking about those shots per game. Like, he went out of his way also to take the 20 shots a game, versus he wasn't doing that in the early parts of the season. I mean, I know it's a shame when you get Monte off the floor, but you seem like Paul George, as the superstar of the team, could have sort of been more aggressive in saying, I'm taking 3 more shots per game because everything I make goes in, kind of thing.
They went 12-12 in the stretch where Monte started at the beginning of the year. Pretty boring.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, you have the team like that. You can blame, you know, the Monte factor, the Stuckey factor, but I mean, the team on paper wasn't an average team, right? On paper, that team should have won probably like 48 games. Probably should have been like this
paper,
year.
They started Glenn Robinson, who was nobody before that year.
Boy, that was his breakout kind of year when Paul hurt.
Yeah, it was. That's true. He was good. He was good at playing off of PG. It's just weird. And like the Lance coming in and then winning 6 in a row was weird. Like,
well, that was Paul George just turning it on and like saying we're make the playoffs kind of thing.
Hey, Lance was not nothing. Games like he jazzed up that team.
Yeah, and also maybe there's a scenario too where they end up not getting the 7 seed but the 8 seed and end up playing Boston as the 1 seed, who was that year the Boston that was
he got
that
hurt. Was IT got hurt in that series.
Yeah. Well, no, that was the year with Boston where they went down 2-0 to the Bulls, and Rondo got hurt. Like, the Bulls team could have beat that one
season. Right. They played very well, yeah.
And I don't know if that Pacers with PG, they would have the best player on the court that series, but that could have been kind of something similar to that.
Yeah, maybe not, because
the chemistry was kind of all out of whack. But that whole year, it just felt like Paul George had 1 foot out the door, and that's why they ended up being mediocre, in my opinion.
Yeah, a lot of people think that. I don't like to slander Paul George.
Well, he did. I mean, he really did have 1 foot out the door. He wasn't really saying
it. Mentally, he did, and we all know that now.
Yeah, Miles Turner kind of blossomed that year too, and he should have been. It seemed like Paul George wasn't really mentoring him in a way. That's what the 1 foot the door kind of thing seemed like. It seemed like that team could have been better. I know we used to play Monte, but they could have had some they had some decent lineups that could have had good spacing in, and that should have been enough to carry the team at times.
And anecdotally, too, I think a lot of people expected improvement. You know, people liked Jeff Teague more than George Hill. You know, Thad Young came in. I think just when you look at the additions, people thought they were going to be much better, and then they weren't, and it made people like seem down on what everybody was doing.
Yeah, I don't think the team was actually better than the team the year before, but
obviously. But at the time, people were so jazzed up about.
Well, I think at the time, actually, I mean, I was kind of more down on it because I thought Jeff Teague was kind of just, he was basically an equivalent to George Hill. He just was better at different things and worse things George was good at. So like Jeff Teague was a better kind of pure point guard passer, but he was a worse defender. And so that didn't seem like a plus to me. And then Thad Young was kind of a plus. Thad Young was kind of the move, was like, oh, we're going to try to win now. We're going to get rid of our draft pick. But I never thought that I thought this team could have maybe won, like I said, 48 games. But I just think winning less games than they did the year before seems like a huge down drop. But then you look at the roster, right? You said it, 8 guys were out of the league. They had really one great player. Everybody else was sort of like good role players. But we've seen, it just seems like the lineup should have been able to work. With Glenn Robinson kind of coming out, there were 6 good guys in this roster that were good enough to kind of play. Right. It just seemed like, I don't really know why that didn't translate to more wins. Because maybe they didn't find it quick enough. I mean, this is Millen's first year, so that also kind of could be delayed kind of figuring it out. There's all that kind of factor. So maybe that was the biggest reason Paul George didn't get going, because they were running something new and he was kind of adjusting to it. I mean, that's also why. I just think George, in the time when I was watching the season, where Paul George was still a Pacer, so I wasn't like, I'd turn on him yet like a lot of fans had. I just thought he looked like he was sort of not giving a crap in December and January. And then he realized he needed to make the All-NBA team to get the contract and started carrying him in October, or March, I mean. And really turned it on and looked like an awesome player, like one of the best 10 players, 5 players in the league, which we thought he was going to be someday. And I mean, I think that March is the best I've ever seen Paul George play, that March month, besides the NBA playoffs. And I say 12 and 13, that's the best kind of stretch Paul George has ever played his career, I think. And that would be the peak he'll ever have in his entire career now, too. And it just seemed like he could have done that for longer stretch in the season.
They clearly didn't know what to do without Jan Mahinmi, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
Jordan Hill.
I mean, it's just that whole year is just a weird year, because when you look back, and I think we talked about this before, it's the amount of guys that didn't want to be there, the amount of guys that had 1 foot in the league, 1 foot out of the league, the bringing in kind of the Thad Young and Jeff Teague for George Hill, and I forget who else they replaced at power forward at the time. I guess they moved.
They had LaVoy Allen playing a lot of power forward the year before, and Jordan Hill.
Well, and then they lost Solomon Hill and Jan Mahinmi to big contracts. They didn't want to match them, or they couldn't match Solomon Hill.
Chase Budinger too.
I mean, like, so they lost. So they had like a lot of turnover in terms of like players who played a lot of minutes. But it just seemed like Paul George kind of should have been able to write all those and sort of carry the team in a way that he didn't until it really mattered the most.
Yes, it was. I mean, it was.
This team could have won 38 games easily. I mean, that's where they were on pace at one point to be.
Their point differential was actually negative, which is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the expected win loss, they ended up at 40-42.
Yeah.
If they didn't win their last 6, which they could have easily gone 4-2 or 3-3, they would have been a 30-win team.
Yep.
So I still blame Paul George, but they also, it's weird, they were 15-16 in offensive defensive ratings, so right in the middle, and they had a negative.
Very average. How it is.
Yeah, they're literally, if you look at their kind of b-ball ref page, they're basically average in everything. They're between, the 14s and the 18th spot in most categories.
Yes, that team was weird. Wow. I mean, Serafin, Rodney Stuckey, LaVoy Allen, and Aaron Brooks, and Al Jefferson all playing over 500 minutes. Just bad. Want to talk about other average Pacers teams?
Yeah, so I think
– it'd be a lot harder for me to do that.
Yeah, so in my opinion, that team kind of compares, I guess, most to – you can look at kind of a couple teams. So obviously the year before, the team was pretty average in 15-16, I thought. That was another season. That was kind of a this weird year. I can't where Vogel was kind of, I think, on the outs, and they kind of figured it out later. But the 2005-06 team, I think, was sort of mediocre. Remember, right? That was right after Reggie retired. The team was in this transition period. I forget if they had made the trade for out of Ron Artest yet. They hadn't yet. I think that was Granger's rookie year. They still had some of the old remains of the old kind of 2003-04 Pacers team that was kind of the beat you up. We're gonna kind of make it 72-70 team, and it was just kind of a very average year. And Jermaine O'Neal was kind of the reason the team ended up actually being any good, because kind of carried them most of the year.
That was the Sarunas year.
Yes, and that was that Page too.
year. Yeah, the shooters everywhere year.
Yeah, I mean, that team was also pretty mediocre. Ron Chesson
went back for a little bit. I came up with a mediocre team that's a blast from the past.
How far back are we going?
86-87.
So that was right before Reggie, right?
Reifman, Pearson. The team's most win shares went to Steve Stepanovich, a really tall dude. I met his daughter one time. She was a volleyball player, and she is very tall. Vern Fleming. I mean, that team had a lot of average. The Rifleman Pearson, sorry. I always think there's an A in his name, and there's not. I have his bobblehead, though, so I really should make sure I say it right every time. The Rifleman era is probably defined by average, but that year they literally went 41-41. So I'm picking that.
And their net average was 0.6 negative.
Yeah.
Which they were 16th in defense that year.
Yes.
Yeah, that was one of those teams that probably is not even remembered in the history of the Patriots, because it was right before the Reggie era, and there was sort of like that whole 80s was just not a great time for the Patriots. And I went back and did some of the like greatest Pacers centers of all time.
That was the year before they drafted Reggie.
The next year they went 38-44, got the 13th pick or whatever. I think that's what it was.
No, they went 41-41 and then drafted Reggie.
I thought they drafted Reggie in the 87 or 88 draft. No, I'm blank.
87.
Okay, so that's when they got him. So, I mean, that's when you would say basketball in the Indiana kind of started for the Pacers, at least, was kind of the Reggie era. Before that, like I said, when we get some of the centers back then, I mean, you go basically after the Mel Daniels era, it's kind of a bunch of like very, very average to mediocre teams. And Dr. Yeah. Jack Ramsey was the head coach.
Jack Ramsey, good times.
Yeah, he was he coached the Lakers for a while too, or no? He ended up coaching. He coached Portland, right?
Quite a few places, I believe.
Yeah. Any other mediocre teams you got?
2000 was mediocre. The year they traded Jalen Rose.
Right after 2001, you mean? Right after their
run. Yeah. But other than that, it's hard for me to say. I'm not a good historian. This is well known.
Yeah, it seems like to me they have – it's sort of like a progression. So, like, they're bad for a little while, and they get to kind of this kind of mediocre team. Or like kind of the transition periods are always when there's a couple years of this mediocre. So you have a couple of these 41, 42, kind of 43 wins seasons.
Yeah.
So, good thing we're on the – I mean, it seemed like the Pacers didn't really have to have that with this team, though.
No. And they don't play well for a while now.
Which they're lucky. For
years.
Yeah, but who knows? You could see a decline, but – who knows? They've been lucky. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll talk about the division after this. Welcome back into the Locked On Pacers podcast. All right, so we hope you liked that last segment of the most average Pacer team. Give us some feedback on that at Locked On Pacers. Let us know what you thought of that. But we wanted to preview the division before we got to our players previews this month, because kind of the last thing we really haven't talked about this whole summer is how the NBA Central Division has sort of changed. Obviously, LeBron left, so that's going to drop the Cavs, who are they've won 4 years in a row now.
Yeah.
And then you've got some other up-and-coming teams, obviously, in the Bucks, the Pacers, Detroit. Tony said to me before the show, basically, besides maybe the Bulls, every team in this division could win the division. You wouldn't be super surprised, right?
Yeah, the Cavs probably not either. But, you know, I think playing with LeBron and without LeBron is different. And I think, you know, guys like Love and JR are better, could possibly be better versions of themselves without playing with LeBron. I don't know. But I don't know how good of a coach Ty Lue is. And they're going to be starting a rookie point guard. So they'll probably be not very good. But I think that there's a way that they end up being an okay team. But, yeah, it's probably, you know, if we're looking at who's going to win the division between the Pacers, Bucks, and Pistons.
Yeah, so let's do the two bottom teams that we think, at least. So the Cavs, you said about the Cavs for a little bit. I would say without a just return of Kevin Love to his Minnesota Day form, that might be enough. The Cavs are probably, what, a 30-win team at the best, 35-win at the best?
Oh, no, 35, yeah. I was
going to say 35 at the best, probably. They're probably between 30 and 35 wins.
I think the Bulls are a 30-win team.
Yeah, but one of these teams is going to be under 30 wins. It's like the way – unless there's a bunch of – I mean, I guess there could be a bunch of 30, 40-win teams, but I feel like one team each division always below 30 wins is kind of the way
it works. Yeah, the Bulls are going to be under 30. That was too – generous. I mean, their defense will not be good.
One of these teams is going to get beat up by the top three in the division enough. They're going to be kind of the punching bag for everybody else. That's going to hurt.
I don't know. I think I'm believing like in the Cavs being cohesive, which is certainly improbable, but there's a way that they end up 35 to 40 range, but you're probably closer right than me.
So last year the Pacers beat the Cavs 3 out of 4 games. It was sort of like one of their more surprising stats. They had a 3-0 lead on the Cavs until the fourth game they played at sometime in January. What do you think they go against the Cavs this year?
Same record, probably.
You're gonna go 3-1.
JR will do something crazy, or Kevin Love will get 35 rebounds, or Jordan Clarkson will hit his shots, or something like that.
So they play Cleveland on October 27th. There's no really back-to-back on that one. It's a third straight road game, but Cleveland is not really a far travel. Then they probably come home between the San Antonio game. Then they play Cleveland in December again. It's the first game of back-to-back, so it shouldn't be an issue. January again, no back-to-back. First game, another back-to-back. It seems like they put Cleveland on pitches before their back-to-back slide, and then February at home again to finish them up. So, yeah, I would say because there's no really scheduling quirks there, they could probably sweep them, to be honest. I mean, like you said, minus, you know, a really good Kevin Love game. And usually a team in your division kind of gets you one team just because they play you enough. You play a team 4 times, hard to beat them all 4 times. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Pacers sweep the Cavs this year. That wouldn't shock me.
I just think sweeping a team that probably wins a little better than 1/3 of its games is hard.
No, I agree. I agree 100%, especially because if you play them 4 times, they do kind of know how to play you. They kind of
– Right.
Their weaknesses. So then I guess roster-wise with the Cavs, they lost LeBron. Kevin Love's kind of the main guy. I guess who else do new players like Sam Decker was brought in, right? But that's
Decker's not really, gonna play.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of like their top guys are George Hill, Love, Thompson, JR, and Jordan Clarkson. I would imagine Jordan might trade eventually. Let's see a lot of Collins Sexton probably.
Yeah, Sexton will play a big minutes. Hood will be back probably. Zizic, you know, not a ton of differences really.
You think we'll see a lot of Seti Osman?
Yes, a lot of Seti Osman.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess it also depends how good Sexton is and whether he's sort of like a
bad
radical here or not.
He will be bad.
I mean, who knows? He could have some good games though. Like, you know, have a 30-point game with Pacers maybe because of something, because they don't have a lot of great defensive guards if Darren Collison's guarding him per se, but they probably put Oladipo on him anyways.
They'll put Oladipo on JR for sure.
Well, it depends whether JR is on the team or if he's playing. I guess the JR not starting in this lineup. I can see a lineup where it's Hill, Sexton, Love, Thompson, I guess Clarkson.
Like that. I would guess probably Hill, JR, Chetty, Love, Thompson, if I had to guess.
You don't think they're going to start Sexton? I think they might eventually.
Hell no. I think they're going to try to be good, even though maybe not the best player. I think they'll try to be good.
I think 30 games in, that goes throughout the window.
Maybe.
You know, when you're 5-25 or 8-22.
Oh, they're not even close to that bad of a team.
I don't know. I mean, who knows? I just think Sexton can get a lot of minutes because if they find out they're in a rebuilding mode, they'll play a lot of Sexton. That could happen. But
yes.
Don't play them a lot late. They play them early in the year, so that will also be a difference. All right, the other pretty bad team I think we both agree on is the Bulls.
Agree.
So they went out and got Jabari Parker.
On the tip of your tongue.
Yeah, no, I was blank. And then they have Zach LaVine, and they re-signed. They matched his massive deal. In terms of other talent, I don't think they got anybody really fantastic. They're hoping to kind of develop some young guys. Chris Dunn, and is somebody else they're missing on who's super young? They're trying to develop.
They have Markkanen from last year, who had that 30-point game in Indiana. And then they have Wendell Carter now, who looks like he's going to be something cool. I really like Wendell Carter. I think the Bulls will be good someday. But this year with, you know, a young starter at pretty much every position and a lot of injury-prone dudes, I would not say they're very good.
Yeah, they're probably going to be pretty bad. They're probably the worst. I think they'll win less than 30 games. I would guess somewhere in the 25-28 range and get another pick. That would do it.
I think their offense could be pretty solid between LaVine, Jabari, Markkanen, and Wendell. And even Robin Lopez is good on the offensive glass. And I think there's a way that they have an average offense, but their defense will just be so bad.
They also have $40 million committed to guys who have previous ACL injury history and don't have like this great history of always being healthy.
Oh my gosh. If they start Jabari LaVine at 2-3, is that the most injury prone and B, the worst wing defense in the NBA? Like ever. Ooh,
it's gotta be. Are they going to, I guess their lineup was probably going to be Dunn, LaVine, Parker, Lopez, and Markkanen, right?
Yeah, probably. I don't know if they'll start Wendell or Robin, but I bet they start Lopez in the hopes they could trade him halfway through the year.
Yeah, I don't think they'll start Wendell. Like, same thing with the Cavs, kind of same thing where they'll start him once they kind of figure out they're in the rebuilding mode. But they're probably more prone to say, we know we're in a rebuild, so we don't mind playing our young guys. Because they did it last year, too, when they traded away Mirotić.
Mirotić, yeah. They also have Bobby Portis, who's young and okay. I don't know. I feel like I'm missing someone big for them, but I don't know.
I mean, Markkanen's the big one. He had a pretty good year last year, I thought. And we'll see where that goes.
Maybe Jabari is the number one option that really works out, and then they win like 28 games.
Yeah, the thing is, the ceiling of this team is just not very high because in terms of talent, they don't have anybody that really pops. But maybe Markkanen becomes a guy that pops. Who knows? I mean, he could, but
right,
we'll see. So the Pacers also went 3-1 against the Bulls last year. Their games against them this year are November 2nd, December 4th, January 4th, and March 5th again. No back-to-back issues. No.
Very nice.
Our first game of back-to-back, but that's it. I would say, I guess, last year the Pacers did struggle against the Bulls the first time. They lost the second time they played them. The first time they had a
didn't they get smoked the time they lost to them?
Yeah, they lost by 25. Mirotić had a bunch of points. But they also almost lost when that home game rolled in with the game-winning three. So
yes.
They didn't play. I mean, it seemed like – like you said with the Bulls, their offense last year, they basically did the same thing where they just committed to all offense and worry about defense. And when the Bulls got really, really hot, it became really hard for Pacers to kind of compete. But who knows? I think 3-1 is probably the record again, too.
On the flip side, the team they struggled against last year, except for one fourth quarter where one Lance Stevenson saved their butts, the Detroit Pistons look like they could be better than last year depending on the health of Reggie Jackson.
Yeah, so the Pacers never had to play Blake Griffin. That's a big thing.
Yeah, that will be interesting to see how they fare against that. And you know what? I think that they're actually better equipped to defend the Pistons now than before because Tobias Harris.
Yeah, him not being there is huge.
Yeah, well, like Blake Griffin's a really good passer and he's a really good post player. But Tobias's skills are better at going at Thad Young than Blake's are. So maybe they can play better against the Pistons, even though I think the Pistons will be better than last year.
Yeah, I guess. I think when the Pacers lost to them the first three or whatever for December, we thought the Pistons might be actually on paper better than the Pacers. But now you go back and hide them, I don't think they are anymore. I think Turner could be on Drummond's level next year, and Turner could make Drummond almost play off the court if he ends up kind of becoming a really dominant stretch player. I think Oladipo was the best player on the court at all times in those games, and then you got the factor of that. They don't really have any wing defenders left. I mean, I think – I know Bradley – well, they don't have Bradley left, who I think is a big one.
They have GR3 and Stanley Johnson.
Is GR3 a good wing defender? I haven't seen him be a defender in who knows how many years.
GR3, like, literally 2 years ago, was a great defender.
Yeah, but he wasn't good last year. So I wouldn't count – I would say Stanley Johnson's a decent wing defender, but I'm saying in terms of I mean, I just thought Avery Bradley was kind of the Oladipo side for a couple games last year.
See, that's why I believe in the Pistons is because, like, if Stanley Johnson even becomes, like, a little bit below league average three-point shooter, like, he was terrible last year, then he and GR3 are both serviceable wings. Kennard can shoot. You know, they have shooting finally to go around all that passing they have in the post.
Stanley Johnson shot 28% from three last year, Tony.
Yeah, he was I said terrible. That.
Oh, you did? You just said
I that? I said he was terrible.
I know, but you didn't say what percentage he shot.
Oh, yeah, and it was so bad. Yeah, if he can get to, like, close to league average even, you know, that's so huge for him that they could be okay. And they were their record with Reggie Jackson on the court was good. But I think Calderon's a better backup for them than Ish Smith personally, just because he can shoot. And Ish can't at all. And I think shooting is what they need off of their post guys. So I think they did things that I like that could make them better, but I think they're going to be worse against the Pacers.
So I think Detroit is probably the eighth seed in the East Conference. I mean, right, I haven't really like done it in my head.
Ranked yeah, seven or eight. If you have them, Miami is possible.
Yeah, or I don't know if I have Charlotte getting ahead of them. I don't think I would.
Right.
I'd have Detroit at the eight team. I think they're just outside the ability to win the division. I think they're more like a 41-41 team, and that's or somewhere kind of close to that, which is probably enough to get the eighth seed. The Pacers do play them kind of weirdly. They play them. They don't play them until after Christmas. They play them on December 28th. February 20th, they play them back-to-back games in April. So, you know, if it could theoretically come down to those games related when they play them twice, and those could become big important games for both teams,
yeah,
positioning and division. I think the team is better in the terms because the East got worse. I mean, losing LeBron knocked the team out of the playoffs. I don't know if the Heat are going to be as good as they were last year. So that allows them to jump up. But I don't know if actually as an overall team, there's like significantly better. I think they could have probably won 41 games last year if Jackson didn't get hurt anyway. So they might have been the 7 or 8 seed or an 8 seed. Anyways, I think just the injury sort of derailed them mid-year.
Yeah, definitely. The Reggie Jackson one really hurt. It shook them up a ton. And then I don't know if the trade was necessarily beneficial for them. I think it was just a swing for the fences at the time. And, now I think with an offseason to work all together, a new coach, I think they'll be better. I think it'll be a good shakeup. But, again, I think the roster is worse against the Pacers, but better overall. And I think they're going to start Kennard. We forgot about Reggie Bullock. Reggie Bullock's a pretty good defender and a really good shooter. I think they're going to start Kennard, and he is not a good defender, so that will help Vic.
Here's my thing, though. Those guys are good defenders, but are they really good enough to really even slow down Oladipo at, I think even like an elite defender stop Oladipo, and those guys strike me as, elite defenders. They're good defenders.
No, I'm not saying that, but they could shut down anybody else.
Yeah, but the problem's going to be, can they stop Oladipo?
The only guy in the entire division who can stop Oladipo is probably Giannis.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of – definitely. That's probably true. I guess the only person really able to stop Oladipo is himself, right?
Hang on. We'll get to that. I agree with you. Pistons probably about 500, maybe a little higher. Their ceiling could win them the division, but it would be hard.
I think 43 wins got the playoffs last year for Wizards, so that's probably the number they have to get to make the playoffs. Maybe a little less. We'll see. The back end might be worse than last year. Like, I think the 7-8 seeds might be worse than they were last year for sure.
So we just said Bucks or Giannis. So let's do Bucks.
Yeah.
Who I think are going to be right at the same, about the same level as the Pacers. I think that could be their push for home court, push for division title, all that stuff, because they have the best or second best player in the conference. They have the best player in the division for sure. They have the only guy who can guard Vic really well. And, Thad actually defended him really well. So if that keeps up, I think that they'll have the number on the Bucks. But if that can't keep up for some reason, then I think the Bucks are going to be a tough team to beat.
Yeah, I think also I forgot to mention that the Pacers went 1-3
against the Pistons. Yep.
They go 3-1 against the Bucks. They're the reverse against them. So the Pacers played the Bucks pretty well last year. The only time they actually lost was when Oladipo was hurt.
Yep.
Besides that, they pretty much they blew them out one of the times, and they beat them in kind of close games the other two times. I think you're right. The Bucks are definitely going to compete with them. They have a better coach. It's going to be more wins. It's going to be a positive.
Exactly.
Again, I don't know outside of Giannis if anybody on that roster is really basically Giannis and Middleton, and it depends on if I have Bledsoe, but I'm not sure they have like a deep enough team, a really good team to really go toe to toe with the Pacers in terms of a regular season, because you're gonna need that depth. You're playing with hopefully no guy gets hurt, hopefully Giannis gets hurt, hopefully Middleton gets hurt for stretches that kind of playing of that. And I think to win the races you need kind of a deeper team. And that's where I think I give the Pacers this slight advantage over them.
I think a healthy Brogdon for the whole year. And the addition of Brook Lopez, I think, is going to make them pretty good. They have three quality guards. They've got three quality wings. They have Giannis. They have at least 1.5 quality centers, depending on what you think of Thon and John Henson. I think they are not deep. That sounded dumb to say. The phrasing there is important because I don't think they're deep, but I don't think they're shallow either. I think they can play a whole game with a rotation of good players, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you think Milton makes the All-Star game this year?
No,
you think there's too many good wings there?
I think Chris Middleton is really good. I also think that people are like putting him at DeRozan's level of impact, which is too high.
Oh no, but he put up 20 a game last season. That's not almost All-Star. In terms of Eastern Conference players, like Goran Dragic made the team last year, right?
It's true.
As I'm saying, is he kind of could he have a possibility of sniffing the All-Star game? And that's kind of because when you look at the Bucks, that's the issue, right? You Giannis, who's top 3-5 player, whatever you want to rank him, and then you've got the next best player is Middleton, and Bledsoe had a really shitty playoffs, and that kind of put me out on him altogether. But that's the problem: is who else do they really have in that around that roster? And they just don't have a team around Giannis yet. That seems like you should be able to put if you put a decent number 10 next to Giannis, this team should easily be a 55 win team. That's how good Giannis is, and that's kind of if you're a Bucks fan, it's annoying at the same time because. This team might have the best player in the East next year, and they can't win the division. That's kind of annoying.
I think their additions really will help because, Thon and John Henson were the worst position on the team. Brook Lopez will help a ton there. Backup four behind Giannis / someone to play with Giannis when he plays three. Now they have Ilyasova instead of nobody they had last year. I think that's going to help a ton. Middleton, like you said, he can score. He's become overrated as a defender, but he's still a really good player. I want him on the Pacers at some point. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, so, he's not bad. I'm just saying.
No, he's very good.
For a number two, he might maybe not be
right. Right. Tony Snell's a really good defender next to Giannis. Bledsoe's a good, well, Bledsoe's probably an overrated defender too, but he's an okay defender. Brogdon's a good defender. I think they have the defense. I think they have enough to be good. It's just like, can they put it together? What does Budenholzer do with them? You know, that's what it comes down to.
And also say this too. I know Giannis is good, but I'm not sure he's quite the closing level yet. I mean, he has some exposed flaws in offense terms,
yeah,
shooting and closing ability. And that's sort of always the difference between the regular season is, do you really have a guy who can close out a team? I mean, going back to our previous conversation earlier in the episode, I mean, that was probably the Pacers' biggest issue, because Paul George sometimes really couldn't close out games the way Oladipo closed out games last year. And that was kind of the biggest thing. I mean, against the Bucks, Oladipo did that. He closed them out. The last 2 minutes, he just went toe-to-toe with them and was able to pull it out by 3 points. And that's sort of the issue with them. But then again, we don't know how much John's going to keep improving. Every year, it seems like he goes up another level. So he does that again, and his three-point shooting's in the 37-38% kind of range. Then he's all of a sudden like, he's an MVP candidate, and that's a player who closes out games for sure.
And he's already an insanely good defender, so when he's on the court, they will be a hard team to beat. It's when he's off, you got to take advantage against.
Yeah, and there's not really any way like you would say, with sometimes you just double team guys, double team on deep. Right. Like Giannis is so big, I'm not sure if you double team, you can kind of get the ball out of his hands or force him to make a, because he's basically a 7 foot small forward, which is
right. Kevin Durant. This is such a minor thing too about them, but like now the Shabazz Muhammad and Brandon Jennings are no longer in their heavy rotation. Like that's plus two wins right there.
Yeah, true. And Jason Kidd Thatcher is also a bunch of wins.
Oh my gosh, he's so bad.
And they have a coach now who's probably one of the better coaches. He has a good roster when he's in Atlanta, at least.
Yeah.
So they play the Bucks, second game of the season.
Second
after Memphis.
Second, am I wrong? You're right. Thank you.
Carry on. December 12th, February 13th, and March 7th. Again, none of those are on back-to-back. So
that's beautiful. That's how it's spread out, and it should be.
Yeah, and they are – what, one of them is on national television? Yeah. One of the games nationally televised on TNT. So, I don't know. I mean, this could kind of be the future rivalry of
the division.
You know, I'm not sure really our division rivalry is that much anymore. I think outside like a big city rivalry, like get the New York Philly rivalry kind of thing if you're trying to build it. But because you play every team 3 or 4 times anyways, but this could kind of be a Midwest rivalry per se between two kind of mid-market teams with, you know, big name with superstars now in Oladipo. And I've seen honestly, the bigger star obviously in Oladipo, but those kind of level guys and relatively young teams, and you got a bunch of kind of other young players that could lead into it. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
The rivalry will be refueled when the Pacers steal Middleton away next summer.
Oh, that would be huge. Do you think they actually can do it? I don't know if they can do it.
I don't know. We'll see.
Because, I mean, if he's another good year, how much do you think the Bucks are willing to pay him? Do they want to max him out?
I have no idea. I think the best thing in the Pacers' favor is the tax for the Bucks.
That's true, but they also have some very, 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 very rich owners in terms of hedge funds guys.
They do have rich owners. That's true.
They have mega rich hedge funds guys. And Pacers have they have a very rich owner, Herb Simon, but different kind of like cash flow rich. A
different kind of rich.
Well, it's a cash flow thing. I mean, you know, the hedge fund guys have a lot more ability to. I think I don't know.
They just got a new arena too.
Yeah, that's true, and they've got so. They might be wanting to do that to sell more seats, and they feel like they have a commitment to the city to
right.
put a team out. I don't know. In terms of revenue, they have maybe have a better revenue base than Indiana does.
Yes, that's possible.
That's the reason to go on the tax, too. If you think you're going to make enough money back, it doesn't matter if you go on the tax. You're just – but
you know what will really make this a rivalry?
What?
In 2022 when back-to-back draftees DJ Wilson and TJ Leaf are going at it every night.
Ah, Tony, no. No. I think the rivalry honestly might be Giannis and Turner. Aren't they the same draft?
How did DJ Wilson, TJ Leaf go 17-18? That's so funny.
I don't know. Are Giannis and Turner the same draft class, or Giannis is two more draft class before him?
Giannis was his 25 mil kicked in last year. So he's one before him, I believe.
Okay. I thought, yeah, you're, yeah, yeah, one before.
2014, yeah, he's 2014.
Did they play the draft that year? Was that, I guess they were too high. They were up in the 20s, so it didn't matter.
The Pacers, that draft, they picked didn't they trade their pick that year?
Yeah,
they traded 27. It was Bogdanovich.
No, they traded the 22nd pick.
I thought they traded 27 to the Suns.
No, oh, did they? I thought they traded 22 for
that was 20 the Scola, it was the Scola pick.
Oh, okay. So, but I that could be the rivalry, though, honestly. That kind of being
I agree.
Because they're both kind of
centered. We're going down the rabbit hole talking about Luis Scola here.
Yeah, he was an okay Pacer, right?
He was solid.
Yeah, an okay player. I liked him back in the day.
It isn't the honest draft because he's not here. So I'm wrong. Whoops. Yeah, maybe he was 2015. He was the Miles draft. Maybe you're right.
No, he wasn't. He was a year before Miles Turner. Turner just finished. He's Giannis played 5 seasons in the league, so now.
So he's 2 years before 2013.
But in terms of age wise, he's only 2 years older. He's only a year older than him. Giannis is 23. But
2013 was Giannis. There it is.
I would say too, one of the highlights of Turner's season was when he didn't he block Giannis at one point in this year. I thought he had a
good. In the Giannis draft, the Pacers selected the mighty Solomon Hill.
Oh, okay. Much later than draft 22 or 23. Also, a thing to look at too is didn't Turner in the game where he threw out his elbow was against the Bucks? One of the dunks.
Long dunk, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so that also the Bucks game. Another reason interesting that was the great Oladipo GIF where he's on the ground and looks up and kind of shakes his head and goes, "This is dumb."
GIF, you idiot! But yeah,
whatever. You know what? I can call what I want. it's a GIF. GIF. Who gives a shit?
Yeah. Deep cuss word.
I've already cussed twice in this episode.
What a draft! Sorry, I'm looking at the 23 draft now. 2013 draft. That's the 20. Okay. When I'm 2013 draft live on air, that is the stopping point.
Well, no, let's just wrap the episode up with a nice little bow. Division, give me the five in order from least to first. Give me a win total. Just give me top of your head.
I'm going to go Bulls 27, Cavs 36, Detroit 41, Indiana and Milwaukee 48.
And who wins the division?
Whoever wins more of the Milwaukee Indiana series,
you got to pick one, Tony. You're on the spot,
Adam. Clearly, I have to pick the Pacers on the
podcast. Pacers? No, you don't.
I'm picking the Pacers for the podcast.
All right. I think
it's going to lock down Bucks on, and we'll debate it.
I think it's going to actually be Cavs, 27, Bulls 28, Pistons win. Like 41 or 42. I'll go 41. That's what I said earlier in the show. And I think you're right. I think it ends up being Bucks Pacers at either let's go Bucks 49, Pacers 50, or could be the reverse. And I think Pacers win the division. I think it's being the 4-5 game though. It's the Bucks Pacers.
Yes, I agree. I think they're gonna be first round opponents.
Yeah, I agree too. And I think that would be that's why I added this little rivalry thing going on. And then like you said, they'll steal Chris Middleton in the summer and that'll be a big deal.
Yeah.
All right. You got anything else? What are you writing this week?
I am starting my lovely player contract series. And the first one up is Miles Turner. So I'll talk about why he has not gotten extended yet.
Ooh, that's not interesting. That's a good one. I mean, we talked about it. It was a podcast, but interesting to read that. Maybe we'll talk about that later too. Why? I mean, we both thought, right? He wouldn't get an extension.
For a preview show, we'll do that.
Yeah. Well, we both thought we would win an extension, right?
Oh, he's definitely not getting an extension. Not a chance. 0%. Okay. So
look forward to seeing you tell us why. In terms of Indy Cornrows, we have some weaknesses, pieces coming up. I'm sure Caleb will have a piece soon, so check some of those out. As always, you can follow our podcast at Locked On Pacers. Follow Tony at Teased NBA, me at Friedman Adam 5. And like I said, we'll have a player review on Friday at Tyreek Evans, and we'll have some more coming up with some guest hosts or guest co-hosts or guests on the show, whatever you kind of experts from some of the Knicks and Mavs and might do Grizzlies, probably not Grizzlies, but Knicks and Mavs people and kind of talk about some of the players. Maybe we should have a Locked On UCLA guy if we have one on there.
That would be cool. Does that exist?
I think there's a bunch of college ones, but I don't know if it's just for football. So we'll have to reach out and see. That's what we'll have on in the month of September going to October. And luckily, we are only 43 days away from the NBA season. As always, it's been the Locked On Pacers podcast. Have a great rest of your day. You don't know.